through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You guys have had a ton of questions so far in the first hour of the show about not just Chris Carson's deal, that not officially confirmed by Seattle, but not just about the new signing Seattle has had, but also about where the salary cap stands, what the salary cap's going to look like this year. No better expert to bring on than CBS Sports salary cap expert Joel Corey right now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Joel, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're well, thank you. So first things first, we've already had a ton of questions because Seahawks fans, for the most part, a little more unfamiliar with what it means to have a voided year. So the number one question we've had so far this morning, especially when talking about Chris Carson's contract, is what it means to have a voidable year on a contract.
Well, this is something you're seeing the teams are doing more this year because of the cap dropping from $198.2 million to $182.5 million. Carson has a $4.5 million signing bonus. It's a two-year deal where they expect a dummy voiding 2023 year. They can stretch the signing bonus prorate and prorate it over 3 years as opposed to two. That makes his 2021 cap number 2.5 when the contract expires in 2023. After the 2022 season, there'll be $1.5 million of a cap charge because of the proration, which is being associated with the 2023 dummy year.
Joel, the other big question that's out there is, you know, the Seahawks had a limited cap space in terms of what they were dealing with. What are we realistically looking at right now? You look everywhere, there's different reports about, okay, they're this much against the, there's this much cap space left. Do they still have a decent amount, or do you anticipate that they would need to make a move on their roster with a restructure or extension of some kind, a creative way to open up more cap space in order to make more signings?
I can't give you an exact figure right now because there's some deals I don't know exactly if they did use dummy years or not, like Gerald Everett's or Patrick to re-sign him. So either way, they're going to be pretty close to pressed up against the cap. So you've got five guys with double-digit cap numbers: Russell Wilson at $32 million, Bobby Wagner $17.15, Tyler Lockett almost $15 million, Jaren Reed's almost $14 million, and Dwayne Brown is a little over $13 million. Those would be the guys you would look at, some of them in contract years, to do extensions. And then there's the elephant in the room, which is Jamal Adams has a $9.86 million fifth-year option, which to give up two first-round picks, you probably want to extend him and don't want him to play out his contract.
Again, this is Jake and Stacey. You're listening to salary cap expert Joel Corey right now. Help us understand a bit more of what's going on both around the league and for the Seattle Seahawks. Joel, when we're looking at the Seahawks salary cap, obviously there are different sources. So SpotTrack gives them significantly more. Over the cap gives them not very much at all. I think under $1 million or so. I don't know if you have a number for them, but considering that we're all assuming that they don't have a ton of space outside of restructuring contracts, is there any move you're expecting them to make? Are they at a point where you would expect a team to have to release guys?
Well, they already dumped some of the releasing, like the Carlos Dunlaps of the world. I expect them to try to make Jamal Adams a priority, which is not going to be a very easy deal to do based on some of the comments he said before he was traded, and then he's not viewing himself as a traditional safety and just a football player. He wants to defy what happens in the NFL typically is you're paid by your positional constraints. We just saw Justin Simmons become the highest paid safety, the first $15 million per year one. But if Adams is thinking he wants much more than that, this is going to be a tough deal to do.
Now, Joel, you mentioned Carlos Dunlap. What is the, as you're watching the market and seeing how it is going about it, and now we're getting into that second wave period here into free agency, what do you think the market holds for him? Because obviously he had a $14 million cap hit. It was a massive amount that the Seahawks just simply weren't going to hold on to. But do you think the Seahawks potentially could be the winners of waiting that process out?
Oh, yes, most definitely, because you have some older pass rushers still out there. Not only is he available, Justin Houston, Melvin Ingram, Olivier Vernon, who's coming off an injury, Ryan Kerrigan, and then Jadeveon Clowney's still out there. So you'll be able to find one of those guys. You saw Mario Addison, who isn't quite as good as these guys, in my opinion, take a pay cut to where he's going to make $6.2 million this year as opposed to a little over $8 million. And last year, Everson Griffin signed for $6 million on a one. So given the depressed cap environment, Dunlap shouldn't expect much more than that.
Joel, you have your Inside the Cap podcast. It's Inside the Cap with Joel Corey. You just had an episode drop where you kind of previewed the first wave of free agency, or excuse me, recap the first wave of free agency. And we always talk about teams that won free agency, but you looked specifically at some free agents who did and didn't get it done. Is there one specific player that you thought he ended up getting a great deal for himself?
Under the circumstances, Kenny Galladay, because the receiver market was extremely soft, I thought that he was initially going to benefit from Chris Godwin and Allen Robinson getting franchised. So for him to have to take visits and still come out $18 million per year, that was surprising. I thought he'd go the one-year route. Then Leonard Williams, he took advantage of a great contract year, signs for $21 million per year, so that was a great deal that he ended up getting, although he was franchised.
Now, Joel, there's a lot of speculation as to what the cap is going to do. Now you see the new TV deal done and the insane amount of money that is going to come from that deal. How soon will that have a positive effect or a balloon effect on the cap here in the NFL? Will we see that immediately in 2022 or 2023? Because obviously a lot of teams are doing drastic things to restructure, extend, trying to get themselves under the 2021 cap. But are they doing that comfortably knowing that, hey, down the line, there isn't going to be as big of repercussions because the cap's going to grow significantly?
I don't think next year. You just have to pay back the money that you borrowed this year to keep the cap higher than it would have been. It may have been 155 to 160 based on the lost revenues if you'd done nothing. So you got to pay some of that back. You're going to spread that over 2-3 years instead of dumping it all in 1 year. I think by 2024, everything gets back to normal. Hopefully next year we can be close to where we were in 2020, $198.2 million. 2023 might be the first year we start seeing some real benefits of the cap going up, but it's definitely 2024.
I know I want to kind of circle back to this just to kind of make it easy to kind of process for all of us, and I know that this is kind of elementary to you, but again, that's why we have you on here. We get a ton of questions specifically about restructuring. I know Jake had a question about that, but I have kind of a two-part question. One, for the most part, can teams decide to restructure a contract without a player having a say? And then the part two of my question is, have you been surprised in any way that a guy like Russell Wilson hasn't restructured his contract?
Well, what teams started doing about a decade ago was sticking automatic conversion rights in a contract. The Seahawks typically don't do that. They do have with Russell Wilson, don't have with Bobby Wagner. When you have the automatic conversion rights, then you don't have to go and talk to the agent and have a negotiation over how much. The player, they have the right to do whatever they want, and then the player has to sign a new contract where he's in breach. The problem with doing something with Russell Wilson is you add to the dead money in future years. One, it would eliminate all speculation that he would be traded. If you did restructure his contract, you could convert everything but his league minimum. That would be $17.925 million if you decided to go that route. But at the same time, let's say you did that and didn't add any dummy years, you're going to drop his cap number $20.05 million, but in turn raise it in 2022 and 2023 by $5.975 million. And let's say you traded him next year. You already have 26 in dead money at another $11.95 million. That gets you to $37.95. So proceed with caution in terms of restructuring Russell Wilson's contract. You typically don't do it in Seattle when Dwayne Brown was acquired in trade. Russell Wilson, they did that with him and also Doug Baldwin, but that's not the Seahawks' typical MO.
And one of the other things that was interesting that is not their typical MO is adding these voided years, Joel. Is this something that teams have been doing for years and years now, or is this a new mechanism that teams have been doing just to try and get themselves around an easier cap number for this specific season?
The teams that push the envelope and are more aggressive with the salary cap, like the Saints and the Cowboys, have been doing those for years. The Saints have been at it in the last three Drew Brees contracts. New England did it for the last reworking of Tom Brady's contract. You've seen the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just totally throw what they've been doing out the window because they're in the middle of a Super Bowl push. They're adding boarding years left and right to contracts. Brady's one-year extension, Levante David's. They typically don't give signing bonuses in contracts and go pay-as-you-go, where you keep the cap number and the cash the same. And then if you don't have any bonus proration, if you don't restructure the contract, you can cut a guy and you won't have any residual cap charge or dead money. But they're looking at the short term. More teams are doing that. Arizona did it with J.J. Watt's contract. It's something teams are having to do this year because of the depressed salary cap.
All right. He is CBS Sports salary cap expert, Joel Corey. Go check out his podcast. And I'm telling you guys, this is the guy to follow for all of this salary cap information. He is the expert. Thanks so much, Joel.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joel.
All right, and we had to break just a minute early because we do have some breaking news just to pass along to you guys. A former Seattle U legend, Lakers legend, and Hall of Famer Elgin Baylor has passed away of natural causes today. He was 86 years old, obviously beloved locally, took Seattle U to a Final Four, but this is someone who his passing sending kind of shockwaves around the entire NBA world now, just because of, I mean, one of the best of all time. So
yeah, one of the best of all time, and also one of the best people. I mean, you talk about class personified, that's Elgin Baylor. And you know, he leaves, we talk about legacies, I mean, Elgin Baylor is the type of basketball player that will be remembered in history. And we talk about the all-time greats, if Elgin Baylor is not a part of that conversation, then you're doing it wrong. And he's one of the guys that, as you go back and watch, you know, film, or just not film, but just watch video clips of Elgin Baylor, he's one of those few players that I genuinely truly believe that even in his era, that you put Elgin Baylor in today's NBA, he's still going to be successful. It didn't matter what era he played in, Elgin Baylor is going to be one of the greats.
Absolutely. Legendary man, legendary player. Awful news this morning. Again, just passing that along to you guys. That news breaking just when we were welcoming Joel on, so wanted to let all of you guys know. It is 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake, what are your expectations for Chris Carson heading into the 2021 season?
My expectations is I think you're going to see Chris Carson have another 1,000 yards year. Last year was a little bit more of an aberration for Chris Carson. I think there was a lot of things factoring in. The fact that he was going into a contract year, you had the Let Russ Cook movement that happened early on in the season, and then you had a little bit of an identity crisis go on with your offense in the second half of the year, and you never really truly found a way to get Chris Carson going on top of trying to keep this guy healthy into the playoffs. I don't think that you're going to have all of those things to juggle this year. I think it's going to be very poignant in terms of Shane Waldron's approach, how he wants to manage this, and Chris Carson's going to be a big factor in this offense and the way that they want to do things. So I would anticipate that you're going to see Chris Carson have over 200 carries on the year, and I would assume that you're going to see him rush for over 1,000 yards again, and you're going to get that big bruising back who is going to be able to make a presence and make his presence known in a given game. And like I said before, the NFC West coaching staffs, players themselves that got that notification that Chris Carson's coming back to the Seahawks, that was a bad, bad day for them because Chris Carson makes this offense very versatile and makes it very physical.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
Does the return of Chris Carson make Rashad Penny a possible salary cap casualty?
Now, I included this in Four Down Territory because this was a question we got earlier in the show, and I didn't ask it to Joel Corey, the salary cap expert we had on, but I'm just going to make sure to include it here. It is a fair question to ask. I would be shocked if this happened, not just because cutting Penny only nets you like maybe $1 million in cap space. He is a 3.4, $3.5 million cap hit. but over $2 million in dead cap if you cut him. So, again, net million-ish savings, $1.5 million savings, which, like, is nice when you're out of cap space. But then what you do when you do that is you have almost no depth behind Chris Carson. I know that people, that fans, have wanted to see more from Rashad Penny. Unfortunately for Penny, it's the burden that you carry as a first-round pick. It is so hard to meet those expectations, particularly for a team that doesn't often pick in the first round. It's a bummer. It really is. And it's, again, really hard to meet those. But as much as fans have wanted to see significantly more from Penny, there is a big drop-off after him. And that's not to knock DJ Dallas. That's not to knock Travis Homer. Both of those guys have had bright moments. But Rashad Penny is still the best running back they have behind Carson. And I think all of us know that there is a chance that Carson is injured. He's just a physical back. And you want to be able to at least have that insurance there. If I were the Seahawks, the $1 million cap savings wouldn't be worth it to me to part ways with Penny.
Third down. Jake, when you look outside your window and gaze upon the free agent market landscape.
Every day.
You get your fresh cup of Joe in the morning and you look at old ESPN, look at the transactions list. What have you learned so far watching that free agent market?
Well, what I've learned is that there are, for the example, the offensive guard market exploded in a way that maybe the team wasn't anticipating, but in terms of every other position, it's gone pretty well for them. And running back was very favorable in terms of Chris Carson and the contract that they were able to land with him. That was a huge home run get for them. Now, I have heard from league sources that the same thing continues to break that way when it comes to KJ Wright and when it comes to Carlos Dunlap. Both players have a very strong chance of returning eventually to Seattle. And the reason for that being is, I heard this in line with what Jeremy Fowler told us about KJ Wright and Chris Carson last Wednesday when he was on our show, that the market was not being kind to them, that they would return at a very team-friendly rate. And I've also heard the same thing about Carlos Dunlap. Joel Corey gave you some comps of last year. Guys, we're talking about $6 to $8 million potentially in terms of getting Carlos Dunlap back. That's absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a $10 million plus type of player.
Easily.
And this market has just been crippling. And the fact that Carlos Dunlap's 32 years old, I think, has played a major factor into it. But if there's a possibility that you could get Carlos Dunlap in that range at that price point, man, that's extremely favorable. And that breaks in a very desirable way to the Seattle Seahawks. And if that truly is the case, that gives you another opportunity to dip back into the free agency market when it comes to addressing other positions like your third receiver position, like your second pass rush position. Do you go after an Alden Smith, a Benson Mayoa? Who are you able to land outside of potentially Carlos Dunlap? So what I've learned is a lot of positions are breaking very friendly when it comes to the Seahawks.
Fourth down. Jake, what has to be the top priority for the Seahawks right now?
Top priority, without a doubt. I think number one is you got to restructure Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner's contract. Those two contracts, to me, you have a number of different ways where you can manipulate and create space on your cap. And I think that's the two easiest ways to get it done. As we outlined on Friday, if you go to Tyler Lockett, Dwayne Brown, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, you go to any of these players and you want to restructure their contract, truly restructure, and you want to give them an extension, they are going to want more money, right? And so it's not as simple as just saying, hey, let's get this done. Let's do it at the price point that we want. It's more of looking at it from the team's perspective and Joe Corey saying, look, in Russell Wilson's contract, there's a conversion. There's the ability of the team to convert his money to whatever they want in terms of signing bonus from his base salary into a signing bonus. And so that would be the easiest way to create cap space. And I think it would bring a lot of stability to the organization just in the future of knowing the exact direction that you would be going in, not just this year, but over the next couple of years. But that allows you to really get yourself back into the ballgame and get aggressive again in free agency. And what do you do with that money? Priority number one, Curtis, name that we just talked about, Carlos Dunlap. Get this guy back. We had Rob Staton on Friday, and he talked about the way the Seahawks entered 2018 and 2019 and 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Those 2 years, you look at their pass rush and their defensive line heading into the year was not ideal. And what did they have to do to fix it? They had to go out and trade for a player to get their defensive line back to respectable. And this year, I don't think you want to be in that position yet again. And so really solidifying your defensive pass rush and who those guys are going to be early on in this process, so to speak, I think is going to be very important.
All right, that is four down territory. Are there any kind of conspiracy theories that you guys totally buy into?
Of course.
What's the big one that you're like, this is, it maybe no one else believes you, but you're like, this is a conspiracy theory.
Stevie Wonder can see.
Okay, well, that's, no, Curtis.
He
no.
can see.
That's, Curtis, that's not
he,
a real one.
He can see.
Mine is, you know, it's not a popular one, but I'll say it with my chest right here on radio to their face, which is, I don't think the tiger exhibit at Woodland Park Zoo is real. I don't think there's a tiger in it.
Who even has thought of that as a conspiracy theory?
Like, not enough people.
I didn't know that.
Not enough people. Open your eyes. This is Jake and his family. You guys were thinking of going to the zoo, and I was saying Woodland Park Zoo is awesome. I used to work there. It is the best zoo in the state for sure, and I think one of the better zoos. Mm-hmm. I love the.
Where is it on your zoo power rankings?
It's not like San Diego or anything, but I like it. I like that zoo.
Okay.
I'm going to say it's not like the Ivy League level of zoo. It's a separate ranking. It's like the, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But
so we're getting back into that elitist.
We are. I am an elitist, and I'll say that to your face. But but there is a tiger exhibit there, and I want you to tell me if you see any tiger, because I'm telling you right now. I am telling you, Woodland Park Zoo, I am on to you. There is no tiger in that exhibit. It is a lie.
Wow.
That's
coming from someone who used to work there.
Well, I don't think the tiger was there when I worked there, but I have passed that exhibit. I live down the street from the zoo. I have passed that exhibit so many times. I have never seen a tiger there. Curtis, yes.
Another text coming in from the 570 conspiracy theories. They don't think Brian is real.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
Wow. That's
Brian is real,
okay,
you guys.
570.
Yeah, no, Brian's real. I have a boyfriend, so that's crazy.
Well,
someone said my conspiracy theory. They think John Schneider actually does love me. He doesn't hate me. I actually like
really?
The conspiracy theory that he hates me. I think that's a more fun one.
It's better for our show.
It is. It is better for the show that way. I would have to imagine.
Now, the moon landing, another popular conspiracy theory. Now, that one is real. That they really did land on the moon, Jake. But then there's the 2004 mooning.
You have a question that I just said. I know people that do.
2004 mooning, which technically was fake, but it was a real touchdown celebration, and it was a great one. Randy Moss finally explained that thought process. That's next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
I'm sorry. Jake, we were all sitting here, having a quick little lunch break.
Yeah.
Before we joined you guys again for The Timeline. We have plenty to get to. We have Randy Moss explaining his infamous 2004 fake mooning of Packers fans. We've got Ian Eagle, who quoted Megan Thee Stallion. You go, Ian, during the Texas Southern game. We've got tons of fun stuff for The Timeline. Before any of that, though, we got to take a moment here. We're all talking about how we have lots of dad energy. We all love Home Depot. We all love Costco. Curtis, you were saying that you're about to actually become a first-time father, an actual
True.
Dad. You and Brenna were at Costco, and instead of, you know, you're also leaving your 20s. You've got a month left of your 20s, and you can already start to feel yourself looking at the deals, looking at vacuum cleaners. You're no longer interested in any
it's
fun
stuff.
Now you're only looking at fun deals. Like, oh, they have a 5-for-1 marinade deal. Like
where you can buy 3 orange juices in one pack.
Fantastic.
They're all factory sealed together.
Man, what a thrill.
I was saying that I was spending a long time at Home Depot looking at all the fixtures for cabinets and ended up buying none of them, but spent a long time looking. Jake, you one-upped us by saying you do what?
Well, I didn't realize I one-upped you, but
unfortunately, I have this... And I mean that. Unfortunately, you have.
I have. a problem.
Yeah, you do.
That I can't stop. Like, I realize I'm doing it halfway, and I cannot stop
it's
myself.
Embarrassing.
But anybody new that walks into my house, I have to tell them all of the things that we did to renovate our home.
Oh, no.
Like, it's bad.
Like, oh, everything.
No. It's bad.
I have to tell them that the closet that we did was new, the flooring, the wall that we took down. I have to walk
Jake.
Them through
He's
every
like,
single
Jake.
Step
Jake,
that
on,
we
man.
Took in our home.
He's like, I'm just delivering a package. I actually did not ask to come inside.
No,
I have
no,
to
no.
get back to my Amazon
But
truck.
I guarantee you it was a treat. It was a treat to see them.
I don't think
to
so.
To see how we took this home that was this you know fixer-upper, and
oh,
we're now
Jake.
Going through the renovation process and look at all the cool things that we did.
How many times are you saying we
every
to make it
then,
seem like Brooke co-signs on this? Because I
no,
something tells
on,
me Brooke
honestly,
is telling you to stop telling strangers what you've done to
honestly,
the house.
Every now and then I look out of the corner of my eye and I can see her looking at me going, what are you doing? Like, this person does not
Jake.
Need this rundown right now.
Yeah, they don't.
But it's but why though? Like, it's cool. It's cool
no
what we did.
No one asked.
Jake's trying to flex on these people so hard.
I'm not
he
trying
is.
To flex
dad
on
dad skills.
He's someone walks into the house and they're like, "Hey, I just came to swing by, and I'm Jackson's preschool teacher to drop this off." And Jake's like, "Did you see the laminate? Did you see the laminate? We just did the floors.
The LVP that we put on the floor.
That's
yeah,
exactly
it looks
right.
Good.
We just sanded the closet. If you turn around and they're like, "I'm trying to leave. I don't want to be here anymore."
Yeah. Come inside. Come
no,
inside.
Come inside. Come look yeah. at the countertops I just did over here.
Sorry,
Jake. You're trapping people in your weird. Home Depot
I know,
world.
And I realize I'm doing it, but
Stop.
I cannot help myself.
You have a problem.
I do, but I don't know if I can get it to stop.
Well,
that's the one thing I'm concerned about is that you know that when you have a problem is when you can address it, yet you still don't know how to fix it.
Someone on the 415 said, Brooke's like, I don't need to hear this every time I come home. Can you imagine if it was to Brooke? All right. Well, speaking of someone that couldn't help himself, and I don't think anyone outside of Green Bay is that mad about it, Randy Moss finally explained his infamous 2004 fake mooning of Packers fans.
So as we go into Lambeau, so as we coming in, before they put the new locker rooms and all that stuff, it's probably about 10 sitting over there over the hill. They got all their pants down. It's nothing but white moon, just all lined up. So we're on the bus. We're talking about, oh, my God. We're sitting there laughing. If you remember my touchdown, I scored the touchdown that really put the game away. So one of the wide receivers came over to try to give me some love. Man, Betsy, I pushed him off. And I don't do that. I give my brother some love. I pushed him off. I said, no, I need this moment. I need this moment. Now back up. I need this moment. And the bad part about it, my mindset was like, dude, I'm not going to pull my pants down. I'm just going, you know, fake moon them.
Yeah.
Man, when I get back to Winter Park, I get out to my truck. They tell me, Randy. I said, what? They were, you know they're going to find you, boy. I said, man, come on now. I was thinking it was all in fun, and, you know, with the game. Boy, they'd have hit me for that $30,000, $40,000 fence.
Worth it.
I love Randy Moss's storytelling.
Yes.
So good.
Yes. It was worth it.
And his accent, too, makes everything better. That West Virginia drawl he's got, it's incredible.
I'm still not mad at that celebration.
Oh, well, that actually, makes it even better.
I was also
right?
young.
So, like, when you saw that, you're like, oh, Randy Moss, how crass, how, you know, like, all this stuff.
Nah.
But if you knew the backstory behind that, that's actually pretty funny.
It is.
It's really funny.
All right. Moving on. CBS's Ian Eagle quoted Megan Thee Stallion during the Texas Southern versus Michigan game, cut number 9.
All right, the profile on Texas Southern, located in Houston, 9th tournament appearance, notable alumni, Michael Strahan, we know he's watching, and Megan Thee Stallion. I believe she sent a message to the team. They're going to rebound. They have to use their body, yaddy, yaddy, body, yaddy, yaddy.
Yeah!
Got him.
Yes.
It took so long to deliver that by that time. They had already been to backcourt, back and forth. They traveled all the way down before he could spit that one out.
Oh, that song's a banger, too. I was wondering where he was going to go with it. I was
My
like, okay,
word.
What's he going to do? Is he going to be...
Well, there's only so much that is like TV friendly that he can
right.
say as well.
I mean, you yes. can do spins on things. And rebound. They have to... Can we play it one more time?
So good.
Have to use their
body. All right, the profile on Texas Southern, located in Houston, 9th tournament appearance, notable alumni, Michael Strahan, we know he's watching, and Megan Thee Stallion. I believe she sent a message to the team. If they're going to rebound, they have to use their body, yaddy, yaddy, Adi, adi, adi.
You know, in the back of his mind, Ian Eagle's just like, nailed it. I got it. And he
is
did.
It
he absolutely nailed it.
The delivery.
I say
of that
Ian.
Is
oh, I messed up.
Well, I mean, it's. It's spelled like Ian, pronounced Ian. Ian.
The most professional sounding person saying is hilarious.
I love it. Use your got a rebound and use their body, yaddy, 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 yaddy. Last story here. We have about 30 seconds. I'll be quick with it. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I don't know if you guys know this, by the way. He did go to Harvard. Yes. He shared the story of when he proposed to his wife at a McDonald's.
Well, it was a classy McDonald's because it was a McDonald's slash gas station. And it was in Earth City, Missouri. The practice facility for the Rams was there. It was right across the street. It's a very long story, but the quickest I can tell it is I bought her a ring. We had a joint bank account. We went to the Gap to get a coat, winter coat. She thought they double charged her. She said, we're going to go home. This was before you could do everything on your phone. When we get home, I'm going to check the laptop. We got to see if I got double charged. So I had to find a way from the Gap to my house to propose to her. I said, hey, you want to go to this steakhouse? You want to go sit by the lake? No, it's November. It's cold. Let's go to McDonald's. Okay. So we sat at McDonald's. I was looking her in the eye. She's doing the sweet and sour sauce everywhere, licking her fingers. So the ring slid right on. It was wonderful.
Smooth.
One of my favorite, I know we got to go here, but one of my favorite proposal stories is you proposing to Brenna she's, was it, am I remembering this right? When she's like, I just need to find a bathroom. And
yeah,
she's like,
she
and you're
really
like, pay attention.
And I was about to drop down on one knee and I was like, dang it, I gotta get the show on the road here if we're going to get through this.
He had brought her perfectly to the spot that he had set up. And Brenna's like, no, I got to go. Like, I got to make this happen.
Like, Kirst, like,
wait, did you
no,
end up
wait.
Proposing at the spot that you wanted to?
I did,
to?
Yeah.
Okay,
but
you just had to
much Yeah, I had
quicker.
To make it real quick.
Oh, that's funny. That's
so
really
good.
Funny.
Coming back to this, by the way, hey, you guys were making fun of me for this, but I got a lot of people that are supporting me about,
okay.
You know, talking everybody through my remodeling process.
Mm-hmm.
But at least I'm not like somebody out there. They said that they not only do the same thing I did, but they go and get the pictures of the before.
Wow.
Which is something I might need to incorporate into
now
this because I don't
you
think
ideas.
When I.
It's making it worse.
No, here's the thing.
Bro,
I understand
sorry.
This because when I tell the story, I don't think people really understand how
Jake,
dramatic
I
of a change this is.
I don't think they
You
need
changed
you.
My life, Texter.
Okay.
Thank you.
God.
I will be doing this.
You're making it worse. Seahawks are bringing back most of the 2020 squad, with the exception of one very, very important piece. We'll tell you about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Going to talk about the Seattle Seahawks bringing back most of the 2020 roster. Before we do that, Curtis, you got a men's tourney update.
Do I ever, Stacey? Gonzaga taking on Oklahoma right now. We are just about to tip off the second half. Zags up 12.
There you go.
46-34 on the Sooners. Oklahoma had about a double-digit lead at one point in the half, but Gonzaga turning it on, ending the first half on an 18-6 run. Drew Timmy, 14.7 boards. And they're just about underway in the second half.
Looks like Oklahoma was feeling confident a little too soon.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Thank you. You know what? We really do need the Zags.
I was just going
to
let that one sit. Yeah. Just let it, you know, marinate.
We really need the Zags to advance, though, because our show bracket that we're using to compete with Wyman and Bob, we have one team left in our Final Four.
Yeah. It's not good. We're really counting on the Zags. But you know what? Do they?
I'm actually.
There's no way.
You know what? I don't even know that Wyman and Bob completed the real bracket. I think they just focused on their snack bracket, in which, and this is still baffling to me, no offense to Mike Lefko, the snack bracket is his greatest creation. It's fantastic. It's really fun. But my guy picked string cheese as a number two seed.
What are you for?
That's Ohio State right there.
Ridiculous.
Before?
Number two seeded string cheese. It was pizza rolls, string cheese. Cheez-Its were number four seed.
Okay, this is like Mike Lefko's childhood
well,
snack
that's,
bracket.
That's
this
when
is
I wonder
not,
who's on the committee.
Yeah,
right?
Because this is not an adult snack bracket.
No,
this
it's
is
not.
This is a childhood snack bracket.
Everything. Lefko, everything else on the bracket was cool, but I really got to question string cheese at the second seed. It's just ridiculous. The Seattle Seahawks are bringing back, reportedly, Chris Carson. That one, I think, the only recent signing that is yet to be confirmed, but Ethan Posick confirmed, so he'll come back. They got a new guard, but they have... Oh, my gosh, Wyman just texted me. I'm afraid to open it.
God, it's like one of those moments where you talk trash about someone, you'd never say something to their face. And they hit you up, you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean a word of it.
I didn't mean any of it. You listen to a weird version
Stacey,
of the show. I didn't
don't
say that.
Crumble.
I didn't say anything. I'm
this
not
is
doing
embarrassing.
Anything.
Curtis, I'm legit embarrassed.
Listen
right
to me. We've got Ethan Posick coming back. You haven't heard anything about KJ Wright, but bringing back Chris Carson. So you've got a big portion of the 2020 roster that is going to be back, with the exception of one notable piece, Jake. And you said that was what or whom?
Well, it was pass rush, and it's Carlos Dunlap in particular. I mean, to me, you look at the situation right now, you have an opportunity as a team to regroup the cast of guys that you were able to finish 12-4 with this last year, make a couple of additions. You were able to, you know, change out your offensive coordinator that you firmly believe is going to make the world of a difference. You bring in Gabe Jackson and move on from Mike Iupati, which you think is going to be an upgrade there. Gerald Everett at tight end. And so the pieces that are missing is your pass rush. And one of the things that stuck out with me tremendously, and I think he makes a fantastic point, is Rob Staten, our interview with him this last Friday, was pointing out to the pass rush. And that has been a topic of conversation over the past two seasons and a priority for the Seahawks. John Schneider, Pete Carroll saying it and addressing it in, you know, many interviews throughout the offseason, saying that this is a position of priority. And then you enter into the season, right? You go to 2019 and you look at the group that was entering that year.
In 2017?
In 2019. You were heading into the year as Barkevious Mingo.
Jacob
Martin.
Cassius Marsh.
Right. 2019? No, that was 2020.
That was the group that you were going in with in 2019 as your leading pass rushers.
Yeah.
And then you go out and you make the trade for Jadeveon Clowney, and you hope that worked out for you.
You got Ziggy Ansah in May, which at the time
it was an exciting move, but none of us truly knew exactly how injured Ziggy Ansah was with that shoulder injury, and it turned out it was pretty severe. But so now you're in a position where you feel like, gosh, I don't know how this is going to come together. It wasn't a great group. You really struggled in that area. 2020, you say that you're going to try to address it again with Jadeveon Clowney. He makes the process a lot harder, but you move on. You sign Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa, and those are your leading pass rushers. And that didn't work out very well to start the season. Then you had to go out and trade again for Carlos Dunlap. So I would really love to avoid the situation of having to trade for need instead of trading. If we're going to trade for a player, Stacey, what I would love for that to be the case in terms of where the state of the roster is that it's the cherry on top. It's the move that, boom, it's a shockwave through the NFL because, wow, that is the move that is going to take the Seahawks to the next level. They are, without a doubt, a NFC championship type of team. Just they're an NFC contender right off the bat with their roster. This just put them over the edge.
Yeah.
Whereas the past couple years, they've had to make these moves to get them to respectability, right? It had to round out some of the misses or the mistakes that have happened through the roster, and they've been great. I mean, look at Quandre Diggs.
I was going to say, addition. I think more Jamal than respectability, because they've been the winningest team in the NFC.
But not at the
time,
though, Stacey. Like, okay, when they made those moves, were they great moves? Was it an upgrade? Absolutely. But make no mistake, they weren't moves that just this was going to send them over the top. This was to get them back to a situation where they could be stable at those positions. Quandre Diggs, who was your starting safeties at the time, right? Marquise Blair was your second-round pick, but he was a rookie that you didn't really want to play. You had Lano Hill. You had Tedrick Thompson. Bradley McDougal, that was kind of on and off with injury at the time. Like, that was the move that you made to try and bring stability to the position. Jamal Adams was a move that you thought would bring you over the top, right? They made that move with high expectations. But in terms of pass rush, they've been in that position trying to go back to respectability, and I want them to be able to solidify that position which I think they can. If Carlos Dunlap is on the market and you can get him for $6 to $8 million this year, that's a steal. That is an absolute bargain. And I think that they can make that happen and put a lot of the ease of this roster away with a signing like that.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, the last time I can think where they made an addition, a blockbuster addition, and someone thought, whoa, now this team is next level, was probably Jimmy Graham, trading for Jimmy Graham back in, I think, ahead of the 2015 season. Obviously, we know how that all worked out in hindsight. At the time, I think that's the closest I can think to everyone thought they were a complete team that just needed one superstar, and then they got that. I think, you know, it becomes harder to have a lot of superstars at a lot of different positions. You've had draft misses. I agree with you, though, as far as that missing piece, that I really, really wish that we could have seen more of what Daryl Taylor looked like, because I think I'd feel entirely different night and day about this unit if I knew what you had in Daryl Taylor. Well, never saw him on the field.
For sure, but let's say you're able to go out and get Carlos Dunlap. You're able to go out and get a player like Benson Mayoa or let's just say Alden Smith, right? Mm-hmm. You get those two players, those two types of signings, and then you're able to attach Daryl Taylor to that. That makes it a very intriguing, very exciting pass rush. And that's what I hope that they can get solidified and get figured out here over the next little bit.
Wyman said that he took the Zags, obviously, in his Final Four, but also Colorado. And like a week ago, we might have made fun of him, and now Wyman looks like a genius. Because all of our other three Final Four teams are out.
Dang it.
I hate it when they win. Yeah. Ugh. All right. Jake's
now
free agent.
Now I'm rooting for Colorado to lose.
No, don't do that.
Yes, I am.
Jake's free
I'm
agent wish list is next, followed by NFL headlines. And then we got Mariners insider Shannon Dreher, all happening in the last hour of Jake and Stacey.